Hello and welcome to Off Topic Talk, the show where we talk about interests, hobbies, pastimes, and passions, all the things that we find interesting in life. Please visit the website at offtopictalk.blogspot.com. This is show number 3, May 7th, 2006. Today we are going to discuss climbing, primarily indoor climbing at climbing gyms. In the news, we have a story about how to become a secret agent. Our media discussion this week will touch briefly on a couple of films about kangaroos, sort of. Stick around, that'll become a little more clear. We have a new song to play for your pleasure today, and we'll close out with another tangential thought about marsupials. And now, off we go. Flash, Bomber, Red Point, Beta, Cam, Dino, Pump, On-Site, ATC, Bale, Dead Point, Beta Flash, Hangdogging, Crank, Crimp, Flapper. No, this is not military jargon, and it is not the latest superhero team from your favorite comic company. This is all climbing jargon. What does it all mean? I don't know what all of it means. I'm still trying to figure out a lot of it myself. If you want to look it up, check the show notes. I will have a link to a glossary. Climbing. Except for a short day of bouldering out in Tucson, Arizona, so far all my climbing experience has been at an indoor climbing gym. So far my activities have been limited to top roping and bouldering. So this is the perspective that I'll be speaking from. A little bit of terminology. Top roping is when you climb with a rope already run through a pulley at the top of the wall that you're climbing. Bouldering is climbing without ropes, but typically you do not get very high off the ground, so there isn't a need for safety ropes to prevent you from falling, although the use of crash pads is usually recommended. I'll also mention belaying and belayers during the course of this conversation. The belayer is the person who acts as the anchor for the climber. This is someone who is on the ground, and they are holding the break end of the rope so that if you do slip while you're climbing, you do not plummet to your doom. Now, why go climbing? Well, let's see. I'm acrophobic. That is, I'm scared of heights. So, even more so, why would I go climbing? I've discovered that it's not really falling that bothers me, but the landings, those will really bring you down. Okay, that was my one joke for the show. Please don't wait, they're not going to get any funnier. Our trip to the local climbing gym was a spur-of-the-moment decision. My wife and I had been thinking about giving it a try for some time, and last year we decided to take the plunge. We were out celebrating our anniversary, we were driving by a climbing gym and said, hey, let's try it. So we walked in, we signed up for some introductory lessons, and our first day of climbing. I have to say, it's very rare that I have found something as exhilarating, exciting, challenging, and addicting as climbing. We don't get to climb as often as we'd like due to time and money, but oh my goodness, that was one of the funnest days that I have ever had. Climbing is a great activity for a group. At the same time, it's an intensely personal experience. In a sense, it is the ultimate personal challenge. On the surface, the premise may seem fairly simple. You start at the bottom of the wall, and you attempt to reach the top. Although this is kind of like saying the purpose of the Daytona 500 is to drive a car around in circles. In addition to actually getting out and climbing, I've been talking to climbers and reading books by climbing authors, and I have found that there is a vast amount of information available online and in person. The book that's made the most sense that I have had the most fun reading so far is one called Training for Climbing by Eric Hurst. Climbing as an activity involves three aspects, the physical, the mental, and the technical. And when you get right down to it, all three of them are equally important. There is a certain level of physical fitness that one should have before going climbing. Grip strength in your hands and forearms is particularly important. What I found most surprising when I first got started was how important the use of my legs was. I was expecting to do lots of pulling and lifting and heaving and hauling with my arms, and it's true, I do a lot of that. However, one of the main purposes of climbing is to use as little strength as possible. The more rested you are, the less exertion that you use on the wall, the longer you get to stay up there, and the easier it is to climb further. So using your legs to support your weight to push and move around on the wall is much more efficient than pulling yourself around in your arms. And while to some people this may seem like common sense, it actually took me a few times climbing to really begin to figure this out, to really appreciate just how important it was. The technical aspect of climbing is something I know I have a lot to learn about, and I would find it difficult to explain verbally since so much of the technique is visual. It involves on grips, moving on the surface, coordinating the use of your hands, body position, your legs. Really, the best way to get a good understanding of technique is to watch people climbing. The mental aspect of climbing is what has most of my attention these days. I am exercising, I'm working out, I'm developing some climbing techniques, but my focus right now is my focus. Being acrophobic has introduced quite a challenge in my learning process. I have found that it is very easy for me to psych myself out before I even tie onto a rope. I have a definite struggle when I'm going up and coming down to maintain enough focus, enough concentration, to not give up before reaching the end of the climb. It's working. It's a work in progress, but I'm definitely doing better as time goes by. Much of the time I'm so focused in on the climb, on the positioning, that all the other distractions are tuned out. Climbing has been an incredible experience, and one that I do not plan on giving up anytime soon. To that end, I encourage other people to give it a try. It's very easy to find an indoor climbing gym these days. Most major cities will probably have one within a reasonable drive. It's probably going to run around $30, $40 to get into it for a day. Most places will run you through some basic lessons, give you the equipment you need, and turn you loose. And I really encourage you to go out and do it. This is one of those intensely personal experiences, hard to get across just how meaningful, how exciting it is until you get up on the wall yourself, to go out and try it. Again, don't let something like a fear of heights interfere. A friend of mine that we got to go out with us one day was even more scared of heights than I was, to the point where she was sitting in the lobby area of the climbing gym, not looking out into the climbing area because looking out at the walls was making her uncomfortable. However, after a little bit of persuasion, she got out on the wall, she started climbing, and if the gym didn't close, she might still be on the wall at this very minute. She was taken to it like a fish to water. So, again, I would encourage everyone, go out and try it for a day. A few pieces of general advice. When you're climbing, don't look down. Concentrate on where your next handhold is or where your next foothold is. Keep an eye open for the next good spot to rest for a moment. Don't think about where the end of the climb is. Don't worry about how far away it is. Very importantly, don't worry about how far away the ground must be getting. Trust in your partner. Try some practice falls before you get up too high on the wall. Go up 5 or 6 feet and let go of the wall. This will let you and your belaying partner get used to the process of breaking the falls. This will be a lot harder than it sounds, but it's also a great way to establish some trust. So again, if you have the opportunity, go grab a friend, grab a dozen friends, go out for an afternoon, go climb a wall. It may sound a little weird on the surface, but I'm almost certain that you will enjoy it if you give it a try. Today's news item. Do you want to be a secret agent? Dust off your portfolio, spruce up on your language skills, and submit your resume. James Bond employer is hiring. In the wake of the London bombings back in July of 2005, there has been a significant rise in interested applicants to MI6, the British Intelligence Service. Up to this point, the typical recruitment method was by referral from university staff. Typically, applicants didn't even realize some of the job interviews they were going through were a part of the vetting process for positions in this incredibly secretive organization. It wasn't until 2001 that a post office box the agency had started to be used to accept apps. Even then, this was not advertised, and applicants had to find out about it on their own. Although I could not find any information on how the agency plans to make itself more open to applicants, I did find the post office box. If you're ready, SIS, Secret Intelligence Service, P.O. Box 1301, London, SE15UD. Don't worry, that will all be in the show notes, along with a couple more interesting links. So think it over, and maybe you could be the next James Bond. Now the media suggestion of the week. Let's talk kangaroos. Yes, the marsupials from down under. I'm going to discuss two films today. Both of them have kangaroos relevant to their plot line, but do not worry, neither of them is the film Kangaroo Jack. These are two cult films. Being cult films, you know, they were not all that critically successful, and I don't imagine that there are going to be a vast number of people who really enjoy them. However, for someone who's willing to experiment, you may find something enjoyable in either or both of these films. So sit back and let's see what we can come up with. First up, we have the action comedy Tank Girl, based on the cult comic of the same name. I have not read the comic, so I won't be making any comparisons between them. In the lead roles, we have Lori Petty, Malcolm McDowell, and Naomi Watts. Also on board are Ice-T and the phenomenal character actor Jeff Kober. Tank Girl is set in a vaguely post-apocalyptic world somewhere around 2033. And the movie follows the exploits of the rather outlandish Rebecca, also known as Tank Girl, and her associates as they wage battle against the fiendish megacorp Water and Power, run by the talented and entertaining Malcolm McDowell. Very few people do evil as well as Malcolm McDowell, and he's in fine form in this film. Water and Power takes its name from the fact that they control pretty much all of the world's very limited remaining water supply. Early on in the film, Tank Girl is captured by Water and Power, but before very long she manages to escape, along with the help of mechanical genius Jet Girl. On their way out, they manage to steal, well, you may have guessed it, a tank and a jet. Now, I said something about kangaroos when I started this, didn't I? Yeah, I did. Lori Petty, Naomi Watts, Malcolm McDowell all turn in wonderful performances in their roles. However, my favorite characters in this film are the Rippers. Rippers are human-kangaroo hybrids. The main purpose of the Rippers is to bring down Water and Power. While the ladies are the heroes of the film, the Rippers are the ones who make it possible for them to succeed in their goals. It is not high cinema, but it is a really fun ride, and it's a great way to spend an evening. So pick it up, give it a try. Moving on, we have the little-known film Warriors of Virtue. To be honest, when I first saw the posters for this film, I thought it was some kind of sequel to Tank Girl that focused on the exploits of the Rippers. But my expectations were blown away when I saw the first previews. If you like kung fu films, if you like fantasy films, odds are good you'll probably like this one as well. Otherwise, you should probably go look through the new release section in the video store. Stylistically, Warriors of Virtue shares some features of films like Neverending Story, Legend, Labyrinth, and The Karate Kid. I will be honest, this film was not well received, but that's not the point. The point is, I love this film, and I want to share my enthusiasm for it in the hopes that someone else out there will find the same enthusiasm I have and be able to enjoy it. I'm a fan of the fantasy genre. I'm also a big fan of martial arts and martial arts films. And this movie has tied both together into a very nice little package. I like the film primarily because of the action sequences. The main storyline is predictable, and the quality of the acting does tend to vary from scene to scene. Visually, I found the setting rather enchanting. It has a very dreamlike quality, which makes sense given the story. Speaking of which, the elements of the story are common enough. A young man who feels left out because of a disability, in this case, he has to wear a brace on his leg, he takes solace in the company and the stories of a local cook and kung fu master, who does his best to help our hero, Brian, accept who he is, including giving him an old book to help him get some perspective on life. In trying to fit in with the popular crowd, young Ryan accepts a dare, a physical challenge, and falls, literally winding up in both water and trouble over his head. He gets swept down a whirlpool and wakes up to find himself in the magical land of Dao. Populated by both humans and anthropomorphic animals, Ryan is taken in by Master Chung and his students, the Five Warriors of Virtue. Didn't I mention something about kangaroos here? Well, guess what? The Five Warriors of Virtue are kangaroos, or as they are referred to within the film, roos. Five kung fu kangaroos. What more could you ask for? We get some more into Taoism here. Each of the warriors embodies a Taoist virtue and its associated element, wood, fire, earth, metal, and water. So the appearance, attitudes, and fighting styles of each of the warriors are all differentiated by the aspects they represent. The conflict in the world of Tao centers around one Lord Komodo, played by a really over-the-top Angus McFadden, who most of you will probably remember as Robert the Bruce from Braveheart. Komodo is literally sucking the life energy from the land, slowly killing it, and using the essence that he draws to make himself immortal. Once in Tao, Ryan, as the outsider, finds out that he's the only one who can read the magical manuscript, which turns out to be the book his friend gave him earlier in the film. Ryan is faced with a dilemma of either helping Komodo, tempting considering the power of the book will also allow him to have his leg work normally, or helping the ruse defeat Komodo, again through the power of the book. This being a morality tale, you can guess which way things go. Along the way, we are treated to the elements of the movie I most enjoy. Kung Fu kangaroos and bad guys going at it against each other. While there are not a lot of surprises, the action sequences are enthralling to watch. Wirework and straight-up fight sequences are beautifully choreographed and performed. In the end, Ryan chooses to make a sacrifice to save his new friends and the land of Tao. This ends up transporting him back to his own world just a few moments before he accepted the dare that looked like it was going to kill him. Having gained some new wisdom, he bravely backs down from the challenge and leaves a wiser young man. In the end, it's a story about morality, maturity, coming of age, and self-acceptance. It's also a fantasy with some really well-done martial arts action sequences. This is another film that you are either going to really enjoy or wish you had not used the time to watch it. My suggestion is to go into it with an open mind and try not to have expectations. I own a copy, and I still pull it out to watch a few times a year. As with Tank Girl, many of you probably won't like it as much as I do, but the fact that I find it entertaining means that there are other people out there who will as well. I want to make sure everyone has the opportunity to find out for themselves if this is the movie for them. Moving on to our music selection for the week, we have a piece called Stylus by Alan Macon. This is available at music.podshow.com. I don't dance, so you'll have to decide if it's danceable for yourself. It is, however, a good motivator if you want to get up and get moving, get an energetic start on the day. So, here's the song. Before I close the show today, I'm going to talk a little bit about marsupials. Kangaroos have been high on the list today. I'm going to diverge a little bit, and we're going to talk about the wombat. I don't know what comes to your mind when wombats are mentioned, but I realized one day that I had no real idea what wombats are really like. Vague images of cute and furry little animals were about it. A friend of mine has used the word in a joking, derogatory sense, referring to some people as wombat-brained fools, but I was rather clueless on the subject. Are you ready for more information on the wombat than you ever thought you'd have? Well, whether you are or not, here it is. The wombat is one of several species of marsupials native to Australia. The typical modern wombat is about 3 feet long and can weigh between 45 and 75 pounds. They are also quite strong for their size, able to dig well and quickly through almost any kind of soil. They live in burrows dug with their significant front teeth and claws. The largest marsupial in the world was the prehistoric wombat, which stood, I believe, as much as 6 feet at the shoulder, was about 9 or 10 feet long, and weighed several hundred pounds. Not something you'd want to meet in a dark alley. Modern wombats, while generally slow-moving, are apparently capable sprinters when the situation warrants it. They're able to reach speeds of up to about 25 miles an hour for as long as 90 seconds. If you consider the fastest humans alive are able to hit around 27 miles an hour for much less than 90 seconds, and an average person probably won't top out over 20 miles an hour, 25 miles an hour is not too shabby for a 3-foot-long quadruped. For defensive purposes, they take shelter in their burrows, hollow logs, other small openings, and leave only their backside exposed. The posterior of a wombat has a very thick skin and lots of heavy cartilage underneath it, making it difficult for predators to get a good grip. Wombats are also virtually tailless, so again, there's very little for a predator to grab onto from behind. In their burrows, wombats have been known to crush predators against the roof of the burrow, breaking bones and causing suffocation. Not an animal to mess with on its home turf. Wombats are herbivores. They live on grass and roots. They also are primarily nighttime feeders. They are solitary creatures and generally do not form families. The young will stay with the mother for roughly 2 years before venturing off on its own, but that's the longest that they generally stay together, except in captivity. While they do not show much fear of humans, because of their solitary nature, they do not make good pets. If this has whetted your interest at all for wombats, make sure you check the show notes. I have some more information on them and other pouched critters. And so we come to the close of another off-topic talk. Next week, we're going to talk about the groundbreaking record label Magnatune, the, quote, "We Are Not Evil," end quote, record company. We'll have some more strange news, a new song of the week, and we'll see what sort of ideas come up that I'd like to talk about as the week goes by. If you have any questions or comments, the best place to post them, as of this edition of the podcast, is on the blog site at offtopictalk.blogspot.com. The show music this week is Ministry of Clodagh by AMB26, Porous Part 1 by Autumn Vane, Intro Man by Andrew Bowerman, and 2012 by Beethoven. All of these are available at podshow.music.com. I thank you all for listening, and have a safe journey.